This is Johnny Cash on Sundfunk in Munich. It's nice to be with you. You know, I lived in the Delta land, in the black mud country. I worked very hard, but I sang every day, and I had a dream of someday singing on the radio.
I'd like you to write punk rock warlord, with warlord being one word.
Lee Scratch Perry.
I am the funny man, I am the sunny man, and I am the money man.
Malcolm McLaren, manager der Sex Pistols.
There was a slogan above both the heads of this new group and Mick Jagger, and it said New Wave. And Mick Jagger had suddenly had all his hair cut off, it was very short, and he was wearing a t-shirt that was a punk rock t-shirt from my store. It's basically been co-opted now by the old guard, and the slogan above read in the newspaper, New Wave. It was as if New Wave was like a new hairstyle. It was as if you cut your hair short and you wore this t-shirt, that was it. That was how you could get back where you belonged or where you thought you belonged.
Debbie Harry von Blondie über Keith Moon und die Boots von drummer Clem Burke.
I don't know. I know that he found a pair of boots. Someone brought him a pair of boots that belonged to Keith Moon. And he treasures them very much. Clem is, you know, has these Keith Moon boots, and boy, are they disgusting. They're so old and so, oh, destroyed and, ugh, gosh, terrible. I can't look at them, but he loves them.
The history of rock and roll, as told in our radio show, Teil 3, The Modern Age. Sendung von Michael Bartel, Produktion Rainer Schaller. John Frusciante von den Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, when we were writing and recording this record, there was no intellectual thought put into it. There was no words. Words force themselves on people's thoughts, and we prefer to work directly from our subconscious. So when we were writing this record, we naturally were thinking more in shapes and colors than we were in terms of, like, figuring out what styles we are going to write or figuring out things from a technical standpoint. I don't believe that the world that most people think exists, I don't even think it's actually real. The world of businesses and money and yuppies and politics and nations, I think people give that world far too much credit for being reality. I think the world of dreams and the world that exists when I put on a Velvet Underground record is much more real. And I could just fall into one of those and be so happy.
$6 in my hand, up to Lexington, 125, feel sick and dirty, more dead than alive. I'm waiting for my man. Hey white boy, what you doing?
Iggy Pop.
The first two, anyway, The Stooges and Funhouse, these records I really, really believed in, and it took 20 years after we made them, we started getting the first royalty checks. And they're very small, but they're steady. And it means a lot to me. And this record on The Stooges, you can see I was so stoned in this shot that they've drawn in my actual eye. I smoked so much dope that day, it was half closed from marijuana, so they drew in a fake eye. And the reason my chin looks so big and strong, like look like I have a big strong jaw, is because I was doing these acrobatics trying to get them to get a picture of me jumping in this. I tried to say, I'm gonna jump over the rest of the band. And I hit my chin on the concrete floor of the studio and I had 8 stitches in my chin. Yeah, they've airbrushed it out. On the photo.
Aren't they nasty looking? Look at him. Talk about four nasty looking people.
I mean, he's looking quite good.
He's, yeah, he looked like Elvis.
Lady killer.
Yeah, he was the lady killer in the band.
He was.
Yeah,
really good.
He was.
This is one of the Ashton girls.
He was the lady killer. They all wanted him, but he was so nasty that he was so bad that he would hardly ever pick up girls because they were scared of him. I would get the most girls. That's Scott Ashton.
Scott Ashton.
Yeah, and that's his brother next to him, Ron. Mm-hmm. Ron had the Nazi collection. Ron was a big fan of all that. Sorry, but you know, yeah. I mean, it's true, you know. Whatever. He used to wear the shit. No fun for my babe. No fun. No fun for my babe. No fun. No fun to hang around, feeling that same old way. No fun to hang around, freak out for another day.
Michael Rother von den Bands Neu und Harmonia.
Ich habe in den 60ern Gitarre spielen gelernt. Ich habe sozusagen das Handwerk gelernt, indem ich kopierte. Die Helden der Zeit, Beatles, Stones, Kings, Eric Clapton, Cream, dann Jimi Hendrix. Und irgendwann dämmerte es mir, glaube ich, dass das Nachspielen für mich irgendwann nicht mehr befriedigend sein würde. Und diese Abkehr, natürlich waren die politischen Ereignisse der damaligen Zeit auch prägend für das Bewusstsein. Der Vietnamkrieg zum Beispiel war auch ein großes Thema. Es ging dann irgendwann für mich darum, mit dieser musikalischen Vergangenheit komplett zu brechen, soweit ich das konnte, und möglichst bei Null anzufangen, um tatsächlich frei von Kopiegedanken und von Klischees, den bekannten angloamerikanischen Musikklischees, zu versuchen, eine eigene musikalische Handschrift zu entwickeln. Eine eigene Musik, das ist sehr anmaßend natürlich und vergessen kann man sowieso nicht. Aber es waren auch ein paar ganz konkrete handwerkliche Maßnahmen, die ich getroffen habe. Also zum Beispiel war ich früher ja Solo-Gitarrist, habe versucht mit vielen Noten auf dem Griffbrett Eindruck zu schinden. Und das Gitarrensolo wurde als erstes über Bord geschmissen und ich habe es nie mehr vermisst. Und stattdessen ging es darum, jedem einzelnen Ton eine Bedeutung zu geben und auch zuerst nur auf einer Harmonieebene zu spielen. Deswegen der Versuch, durch Kompliziertheit etwas an Wert zu schaffen, das zu überwinden und das Gegenteil, einfach die Einfachheit in den Vordergrund zu stellen und langsam, aber sicher das eigene, ja, die Farbpalette von mir aus in der Musik zu finden und zu entwickeln.
Jacky Liebezeit, Schlagzeuger bei Can.
England war das beste Land für uns, wo wir das größte Ansehen genießen. Und das Ansehen resultierte daraus, dass wir eben nicht Englisch klangen. Während unser Ansehen in Deutschland zu der Zeit sehr gering war, weil wir nicht Englisch klangen. Und die haben gesagt, Can, they can't. Weil sie, die meinen, wir können nicht so spielen wie die Engländer. Keiner hat begriffen, dass wir das nicht wollen. Nur die Engländer haben wahrgenommen. Das hat endlich mal. Es gab auch deutsche Gruppen, die nach England gekommen sind, die Englisch gespielt haben. Die sind überhaupt nicht aufgefallen. I'm in love with my girl. She's away. Man, got to move on, man. You got to move on, man. Need your help. I need your love today. Once I was blind, now I can see. Now that you're in love. Thank you.
Green.
I didn't have no songs. So I was just trying to imitate whoever had a hit song on the record player, on the radio. I'm going to wait till the midnight hour or whatever, you know, because I didn't have any songs. He kept telling me, sing like Al. Stop trying to sing like Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson and sing Al Green. Every time I started singing, I says, I'm so in love with you, whatever you want. And you really cut off the machine, crack in your ears. You might say, oh man, what's wrong with that? He said, Al, sing like Al Green.
I'm so in love with you, whatever you want to do is all right.
Alan Toussaint über New Orleans und Soul.
In all of the years that I've been in New Orleans, which is all of my life, I've enjoyed the traditional Mardi Gras songs, and I've never recorded one of my own until as of lately here. And lately meaning last Mardi Gras, before this one, I recorded a song called Mr. Mardi Gras, and the other side was I Love a Carnival Ball. This was inspired by a gentleman by the name of Blaine Kern that makes the floats, the Mardi Gras floats that roll down the street. Because his whole life is built around that. It's a Mardi Gras world. And I call him Mr. Mardi Gras, and others too. So I wrote that song about him, not planning to really record it, but when he heard it, he insisted that I record it. And he designed the cover. And that's how this Mardi Gras album came out.
Cat Power über Coverversionen.
The Stones, Rolling Stones' first record was B.B. King and, you know, Muddy Waters and stuff. So I think it's really normal and healthy, I think, to keep that translation because it translates differently to different people. And the more that people learn and accept about different styles and things, the more open-minded people can be about music and the more open-minded their brain grows about music, perhaps the brain will grow about ideas and concepts. You know, some of my favorite songs by like James Brown, there's one that goes, I lost someone, 1,000,000 to 1, 10,000 people under my thumb. There's that one. And then there's try me, that one. So I can't decide because I love that I lost someone 1,000,000 to 1. But I love all the old James Brown before he got like real famous and started getting groupies and got funky. I loved it when he was like younger and you know, no self-confidence, but he could sing his ass off when he was a young teenager. Those are my favorite.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, I can do standards with my eyes shut, in my sleep, not even breathing. I can do standards easily, but I'm not about doing what is easy to me. I'm about pushing myself. It's nice to sing old songs and bring something new to old songs, but to me, that's too easy. That is not pushing yourself hard enough. To me, it is much more important to make music that is of my time and represent where I've been and where I'm at and where I'm gonna be, you know, because you know, that's the challenge to me. When I don't have a grasp on what's going on around me and I can't write anymore, that's when I'll sing jazz standards, you know. And I'll be able to do that until I'm dead, you know, I'm never gonna lose that. But while I'm young, you know, it's important for me to make new music.
For me, no, I'm gonna open my bed, kill.
George Clinton.
The funk is up in the air, getting ready to come down, kicking up a ruckus and all that stuff, shaking their booties and talking about what is a booty and how will I know if I'm shaking it. Funk is its own energy. Funk is its own fuel. Funk replenishes itself. Back in the early part, funk used to be a bad word. But funk straightened out all of that. Time is in time.
Do you promise the funk? The whole funk, nothing but the funk. Ready or not, here we come. Getting down on the one which we believe in. Here's my chance to dance my way out of my constriction.
Green Guardside von Skritti Politti über Soul und Kraftwerk.
You know, any reports about, you know, youth culture and rock and roll being dead or even being sick are just nonsense. It'll never die and there's nothing that can detract from it, regardless of...
Nein, er ist nicht tot. Ich finde, er lebt und es geht ihm gut. Alle Berichte über Jugendkultur und Rock'n'Roll und ihren Tod oder auch bloß ihre Krankheit sind Unsinn. Er wird niemals sterben, ganz egal, was passiert. Aber ich glaube nicht an einige Mythen von Pop und Rock'n'Roll. Ich glaube nicht, dass schwarze Musik Soul hat. Ich habe eine Leidenschaft für Kraftwerk. Man nimmt gemeinhin an, dass Aretha Franklin Soul hat und Kraftwerk nicht. Das ist Müll. Kraftwerk hat genauso viel Soul wie Aretha. Das ist der Punkt. Deswegen mache ich gerne Skritti-Platten, die auf ihre Art so süß und saccharinmäßig und künstlich sind. Ich bin misstrauisch. Ich glaube eigentlich nicht an Soul. Die ganze Idee Soul ist mittelalterlich, Unsinn, sogar rassistisch. Dieses ganze Geschäft, Black Music hat Soul, alles Kacke.
Wolfgang Flühe, Schlagzeuger bei Kraftwerk.
Als die zu mir kamen da, die haben mich dort im Atelier besucht, da war ich völlig von den Socken. Das konnte ich mir überhaupt nicht vorstellen, wo mein Platz in ihrer Musik hätte sein können. Und das hat mich einfach mal gereizt. Ich bin immer neugierig und sage nie nein, bevor ich was nicht kennengelernt habe. Ne? Und als wir dann das erste Mal bei denen im Studio waren, da hat es mir dann doch überhaupt nicht gefallen. Die hatten nur so ein vergammeltes kleines Kinderschlagzeug. Das war einfach wirklich frustrierend, da dran zu sitzen. Das war kaputt und hat nicht gut geklungen. Und nach dem Abend war auch erstmal wieder Sense und ich dachte, das wär's jetzt. Ne? Bis die dann wieder 2 Monate später gekommen sind und sagten, das wäre doch so klasse gewesen damals. Ich hätte so ein simples Timing und würde so schön wenig spielen. So jemand hatten sie ja gesucht. Ne? Und da begann ich erstmal den Begriff von Minimalismus kennenzulernen. Und sie hätten einen Auftritt in Aspekte und sie wollten 2, 3 Songs vorstellen von ihrem Ralph Florian Album. Und nun gut, dann war das einfach ein Auftrag für mich. Sie haben Kohle geboten und nach Berlin zu fliegen, wenn man noch nicht viel von der Welt gesehen hat. Als junger Mann, das war einfach aufregend und dann habe ich mitgemacht.
Ralf Hütter von Kraftwerk.
Ja, wir arbeiten an einer Zusammenführung von Musik, Technik, Mensch, Maschine und wir haben sehr viel Arbeit gemacht in unserem Klingklangstudio, eben um das transportabel zu machen, alles in Module verwandelt und unsere ganze Musik ist auf digitaler Ebene jetzt computergesteuert und wir haben eben Zugang zu den Computerprogrammen, ist also lebendige Computermusik. Wir steuern Regler, Fader, Knöpfe, drehen an Knöpfen und ziehen Kanäle, ist also alle möglichen Sachen, machen Stimmen, modulieren Klänge und steuern Räume, Effekte, alles. Also wir haben immer Zugang zu dieser Musik. Es ist also praktisch industriell automatisierte, audiovisuelles, was weiß ich was.
Reagiert ihr auf das, was so auch von außen kommt an elektronischer Musik?
Wir gehen tanzen und ab und zu, wenn die Zeit es erlaubt, und wir hören Geräusche. Unsere Ohren sind Mikrofone. Wir nehmen das auf und wir machen seit 20 Jahren Techno-Musik. Ja, unsere Musik war immer sehr alltagsbezogen von Autobahnen und Schaufensterpuppen, Model, Computerwelt. Also unsere Gedanken kreisen immer über das, was wir wirklich machen, Erfahrungsbereiche. Wir haben also nie über andere Dinge überhaupt gesprochen. Das wird überall verstanden, dass elektronische Musik ist irgendwie von 20 bis 20.000 Hertz und es wird immer weitergehen, Musik als Träger von Ideen.
Waren wir schon in Amerika am Broadway. Viel zu schnell, wir waren völlig überrascht damit und gar nicht vorbereitet. Aber irgendwie haben wir das doch hinbekommen mit 4 Neonröhren als Lightshow und mit unserem sonderbaren Stricknadelschlagzeug. Ich habe noch ein zweites gebaut für den Karl, der noch dazugekommen ist. Und Ralfs Synthesizer, Minimoog, und Florian hatte dann einen Up-Synthesizer, mit diesen schrägen Elektronik durch Amerika zu reisen und die Leute völlig zu verblüffen, weil die noch nie einen Synthesizer gehört haben. Die kannten ja nur diese brämenden Gitarren von schwitzenden Rockern, die ihre lange Mähne und ihre zerrissenen Jeans schmeißen und alle den anderen immer imitieren. Und wir haben uns kurze Haare schneiden lassen und so graue Anzüge angezogen und die deutschen Technokraten gespielt. Und das war eben das wirklich das Deutschtümelnde, was fremd und neu und so sonderbar war dafür, dass sie das eben wirklich als was Eigenständiges gesehen haben.
Dieses Deutschtümelnde in der hybriden Form, darauf sind die Amis dann vollkommen abgefahren?
Gar nicht so sehr, nee. Die sind auf diesen Song abgefahren. Fahren, fahren, fahren auf der Autobahn war auch ein Verwechselspiel mit Beach Boys Fun, Fun, Fun. Und die dachten wohl, wir sängen Fun, Fun, Fun on the Autobahn. Dass es noch so viel Spaß auf der Autobahn war zu fahren hier, weil wir kein Speedlimit hatten. Da gab es in Amerika schon längst dieses 55-Meilen-Speedlimit. Und hier konnte man mit den Porsches und mit den Ferraris noch über die Highways brettern. Wahrscheinlich, es ist ja eine Autofahrernation Amerika. Der Song passt einfach unheimlich gut zu denen, wenn sie über ihre endlosen Highways fahren und diese 28-Minuten-Version dann auf dem Tape hören konnten, ne?
Hi, I'm Iggy. You're listening to
Zunfunk.
Zunfunk.
Zunfunk yourself.
Zunfunk, funk, funk, funk. Say, hey Josh, it was nice.
Ich sagte, hey Josh, es war interessant, sich mit dir über Deutschland zu unterhalten. Aber ein paar Dinge weißt du vielleicht noch nicht über sie.
You know what they call a musical hook in Germany? They call it an Ohrwurm. Because it crawls in your ear.
Weil es in dein Ohr kriecht und du bekommst es nicht mehr heraus.
Do you know what German slang is for a dick? It's a Schwanz.
Und wusstest du, dass die Deutschen Fast Food lange vor McDonald's hatten? Und du bekommst im Schnellimbiss sogar Bier, weil sich die Deutschen da nicht so anstellen. Es waren nicht nur die 70er Jahre toll in Deutschland. Erinnert euch nur an Fassbinder, an den Film Berlin-Alexanderplatz. Ihr habt eine hochinteressante, heftige und kriminelle Seite an euch in Deutschland, die mich immer fasziniert. Und dazu Champagner auf Eis. What's happening? Night clubbing, we're night clubbing, we're an ice machine. We see people, brand new people.
there's something to see.
Hi, this is Brian Ferry. One of my favorite male singers is Lou Reed. And one of his big hits, I suppose, as a solo artist, was this one, which always makes me think of New York, which is one of my favorite cities to spend time in. And it's a great energy there. And there's a kind of great romance to the city, even though it's kind of fairly modern. It has a kind of, a very kind of strong recent history of, what, a couple of hundred years or something. And I like New York very much. And this is Walk on the Wild Side.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked away across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. Candy came from out on the island. In the back room she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo 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 doo. Gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that patch. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot 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 doot.
David Bowie.
Guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed
devise and screw down hairdo like some cat from Japan.
I was so happy I had an audience. but I think it was mainly what I was doing to me, which was more serious. Because in the striving to experiment continually with my day-to-day existence drove me so downstream, down the hill, and where I got so involved with drugs becoming such an essential part of my life to maintain this synthetic existence, this existence of continually trying to push taboos and going into dark areas, and that I felt was absolutely necessary for an artist to do. That I was in great danger of losing my whole existence through this.
Sick of playing guitar.
It was constructed in such a way that it would be impossible to define the boundary between my public life and my so-called private life. I would be the first one to acknowledge that. Having to live with that, though, is a lot more complicated and a lot more psychologically damaging than maybe just viewing it from the outside. And I think probably for my own sanity, I had to change things, you know? I'm not of the opinion that it's necessary to die for one's art. And I felt that I probably was on a course that would have killed me eventually. I'm quite sure I was.
Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth. You pull on your finger, then another finger, then cigarette. The water wall is calling, it lingers, then you forget. Oh, oh. Rock and roll suicide. You're too old to lose it, too young to choose it. And the clock waits so patiently on your song. You walk past the cafe, but you don't eat when you've lived too long. Oh no. You're a rock and roll suicide. Ship breaks a snarling as you stumble across the road. But the day breaks instead, so you hurry home. Don't let the sun blast your shadow. Don't let the milk float rob your mind. They're so natural, religiously unkind. Oh no, love, you're not alone. You're watching yourself, but you're too unfair. You've got your head all tangled up, but a fire can only make you care. Oh no, love, you're not alone. No matter what or who you've been, no matter when or where you've seen, all the lies seem to lacerate your brain. I've had my share.
Malcolm McLaren, manager der Sex Pistols.
I chose to work in music simply because it was something that happened to fall into my lap at a time when I was working on the street with fashion after I left art school, because many, many, many pop stars on that street in London, the King's Road in Chelsea, frequented my store. Well, of course, I didn't know a single thing about the record business or the idea of making a record, or really didn't have even any relationship with any of these pop stars. I might have sold them an occasional tie. I might have sold them a T-shirt. I might have seemed to be talking to them, but I didn't know them. But their fans, who camped continually outside the shop, this was in 1974, thought I might. Some of those fans that pleaded with me to create a group, I finally gave in to and saw myself as an actor acting out the idea of being a manager of these street urchins, these kids, these fans. And so I imagined myself a bit like Fagin with the Artful Dodger from Charles Dickens' novel, Oliver Twist. And I came in to the record world from a completely different angle. And by doing that, I shocked a lot of people. I would be very arrogant about selling a group that couldn't play as being a very positive idea on the basis that they were too young to know how to play. How could they play? I mean, after all, they're not as old as Rod Stewart or as old as Mick Jagger or as old as Gary Glitter and some of the other artists at the time. They're only 18. Of course they can't play, but the fact that they're 18 and they want to play is good enough to give them the right to be on that stage. The record industry finally gave into it and signed the group, and they became known as the Sex Pistols. That's my art. That's what I did. I created that scenario and continued to paint pictures of the Sex Pistols and their fans and the whole environment in which they could play in, run wild in, behave in, do what they wanted in. And I let this incredible freedom happen, in which they were able, I suppose, to voice themselves in a way that a lot of other rock bands couldn't. And it made the rest of the pop world seem old, tired, uninteresting, stale, and it gave opportunity to a whole new generation. And that in itself was like painting a whole new kind of picture. They were virgins. They were not what people thought in this world as sexually liberated, who were making love every 5 minutes of the day. Not at all. Susie and the Banshees, they were virgins. The Sex Pistols were virgins. I don't think Johnny Rotten made love to anybody whilst he was in the Sex Pistols, and even when he left the Sex Pistols. I think he made love to somebody, a German lady called Nora, 5, 6, 7 years ago. First time. He was a virgin up until that point. Sid Vicious, he was a total virgin. And the only person he made love to was the girl that he finally met, a girl who chose him as her target, a groupie girl from New York called Nancy. So all this black leather and black rubber and dog collars and all this attitude I was inventing and creating in my shop was all put onto a generation to look fierce, to show the world all this sex that was inside their bedroom or inside the cupboard, and throw it onto the street and make everybody think, terrified that these kids were going to run amok, we're going to tear the town apart, we're going to paint the town red, we're going to change things dramatically. But it was the statements, it was the slogans, and it was the clothes, and it was the whole idea of it that I think in the end made rock and roll finally be given a huge nail in its coffin in a way, because what the Sex Pistols did was not start anything. I think they were an expression of the end of something. They were throwing away, they were dismantling all that pop aristocracy, all that cliché, if you like, of rock and roll that everybody had got sick and tired of in 1976. And the Sex Pistols were like the last breath. It was as if, boom, we're going to demystify this whole god of pop. These gods that we've built up, we're now going to destroy completely.
Iggy Pop.
You know, we were from Detroit, and it was a motor, it was the Motor City at the time, and it was all about the big inspirational thing for it all, I think, was cars. Drag strips and rum, rum, turbocharged and, you know, rum, 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 big motor, zoom, that feeling. I used to like to take LSD and go sit, I would sit on the overpass of the expressway, what do you call them here, the freeway?
Yeah, Autobahn.
Autobahn. I would sit where one Autobahn crossed another Autobahn, and I like to sit and listen to the cars go under me. Whoosh, 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 whoosh. And each car had a different kind of, some had whoom, and some had whee, and some had whoosh. And these were the sounds that I wanted to capture.
Lucky, you know, Blondie has, you know, been accepted by radio, you know.
Debbie Harry von Blondie über das CBGBs in New York und die dortigen Toiletten.
We would all hold it. Hold it and not go down there. I think maybe that song from the Ramones was partially about that. You know, oh no, I don't want to go down to the basement. Cause down there. You know, as kids, we never wanted to go down to the basement because it was so dark and scary. And that toilet was certainly very scary. Only once in the past years did I feel like, oh, I wished it was the 70s again, and that was after the Trade Tower was attacked. And that was the only time. It was a more innocent time for me. There's great art museums, there's shops, the Whole Foods store. I mean, no more bums. No more bums on the street. God, they were so entertaining, all those drunks and bums, you know. They all had their identities and they were, you know. In a way, it's a tradition that you don't really see that much anymore. And that was the sort of tradition that started in the 1920s in the Depression in the United States, was that there was tramps and hobos that traveled from season to season. And they would be on the trains, you know, and they would go, in the wintertime, they would go to Florida, and in the summer, they would come back up north. And, you know, that was a sort of interesting old tradition. I think that's died out now.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Hey kids, it's me, Joey Ramone here, and catch me tomorrow on Zint Funk. Das ist gut, ja. And now that, especially in America, that there's this punk resurgence going on with Green Day and Rancid and Hole and Offspring, and you know, and it's great for the young kids, you know, that they can have music that's about like free expression and music to call your own, you know what I mean? It's you know, strictly about attitude, and as opposed to music that was around when we started, like disco and corporate rock, you know, and all the shit, you know. Actually, I guess the people I can really appreciate the most are older artists, you know, because a lot of the kids, they're not doing anything original or unique. They're just really copying what we did, you know. They're not doing anything that's really unique or, you know, I mean, like the Ramones or Tom Waits or, you know, artists who are, you know, unique and original in their own right, you know. It was all about originality back in the 60s and late 50s and all. Today it's all about jumping on other people's bandwagons, you know.
Johnny Thunders.
I had, you know, bad problems with drugs. I had to get away from New York. I had to go get away from bad influences. I had to get my health together. You know, I'd been through that for fucking 12 years. I was a junkie for 12 years, you know.
So lange, Johnny Thunders lebt. So lange bleib ich ein Punk.
I'm not a musician. I hate musicians. I think musicians are very competitive. Music isn't a competitive thing. It's something to enjoy. I'm an entertainer myself. I'm not going to be an old fart like that, no. I won't be a Carl Perkins either. I'll be a little Richard, maybe. If I lose my hair or I grow hair on my chest, I'll give up.
Iggy Pop.
It's like, I don't take drugs anymore, but if you want to take some, go ahead, I'll watch. It's okay, you know? But on the other hand, I don't advise you to do it. Yeah. It's like that. On the other hand, I like to go do, sometimes I'll do like projects with guys who are really fucked up. And it, well, you know, like guys at Guns N' Roses and shit, which will be fine, you know, that's cool because they're at a different phase in their lives. They don't fuck around too much. Yeah. No, not too much. You know, when I was getting ready to do Brick by Brick and Slash and Duff were gonna work with me on it and we were discussing how we were gonna work, the thing that always cracked me up about those guys is like, Slash has this Porsche that's worth like $200,000, right? And Duff's got this black Corvette, but they never drive them because they're always drunk. And so they always order giant limousines to take them around because, hey man, I'm sorry, I would have picked you up in my car, but I'm too drunk to drive it. So like, they're smart, they're smart boys, you know, whereas like when I was 22, 23, I would have driven the car.
John Cale. Live im Schwabinger Bräu München am 28. Februar 1983.
This song was written by Elvis Presley.
The History of Rock and Roll as told in our radio show. Teil 3, The Modern Age. Sendung von Michael Bartle. Produktion Rainer Schaller.
Since my baby left me, I found a new place to dwell. Down the end of Lonely Street, Heartbreak Hotel. Feeling so lonely, baby. Feeling so lonely, baby. Feeling so lonely, baby. I could die. The bellhop's tears keep flowing, and the desk clerk, he is dressed in black. They've been so long on Lonely Street, they never will get back. Feeling so lonely, baby. Feeling so lonely, baby. Feeling so lonely, baby. They could die. If your baby leaves you, and you've got a tale to tell, just take a walk down Lonely Street, straight to Heartbreak Hotel, where you could be so lonely. And I could be so lonely. We could be so lonely. We could die.
So thanks again, friends, for coming, and I hope you enjoy the music.
Thank you very much.